Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 77 for January the 6th, 2015. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through this magical world of servers, switches, fiber optics, Cat 6, Cat 5, and all things connected. First of all, my friends, I want to wish you a happy new year, and hopefully this year will bring you great joys and happiness around your servers and around your networks and switches and everything else that's connected. Maybe you'll be getting some new wireless this year. Maybe that's some kind of plan you might have for this upcoming year of 2015, or, you know, rolling out some new VLANs or putting in some new, DNS servers or, you know, whatever. But anyway, regardless, I want to wish you a very, very happy new year. And hopefully we can extend this podcast until 2016. Hopefully I can keep finding things to talk about each week and try to bring you some new subjects and, you know, some new topics. I think that's really, really key here, is to bring some new topics to you here. And hopefully we will be able to enlighten you with some new knowledge. Folks, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. Also, we are simulcasting, is that right? I don't know. Or syndicated, I guess it would be a better word, on Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com. And it's just another place where you can pick up this show. You can download the app on your smartphone today. Yes, today. Well, any day you want, really. It's a free app, and it's called Stitcher. And you'll find tons of podcasts, not only technology, but I listen to podcasts on there about reading and about books. Yeah, I'm kind of a book nerd. I like to read a lot as much as I possibly can. And it's just nice to sit back and listen to a podcast about reading sometimes. It's really, really relaxing to me. But you'll find all tons of great shows on Stitcher.com. Folks, last week we tried to stream live and in living color across live stream. So we tried to stream live on live stream last week, and, you know, we had a whole number one viewer, and that was me, kind of viewing myself there, making sure the stream was running okay. So this week I am not, again, broadcasting on live stream. These shows are not going to be recorded for YouTube. I was recording them and putting them on YouTube, but I started receiving a lot of takedown notices because evidently the music that I'm using, they said, was copyrighted, even though I found it in GarageBand. But, you know, and I'm a partner with YouTube, so, you know, I'm going to believe they have a bot on their server. And the way this works is the bot just goes through and says, "Whoa, I know that tune." You know, it's like, remember, name that tune in, like, you know, three notes or less. And it just takes the video offline. Or it takes the monetizing, it takes that off of the video, and then you have to go in and strip the music, and it's a pain. It's a lot of work. I mean, to broadcast to you as a podcast, I know a lot of you listen to this show in your cars, and the viewing isn't really, really high on the YouTube videos anyway, so I'll see if I'll bring those back. But I'm going to have to do a lot of editing with the video after the show, so it's something I have to work on in my head. So right now, you're not going to find a live stream up because, like I said, nobody was watching it. I'm looking at another radio app. At one time, I was using Spreaker, but Spreaker wouldn't see eye to eye with me. I said, "Look, guys, I just want an hour and a half broadcasting abilities, and I wanted to pay $100 a year." And they said, no. "You need 3 hours of broadcasting, and it's $200 a year." So I couldn't pay that. So I decided I was going to knock that off for the new year. So Spreaker is now gone. So the only place you can find this is on my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You'll find these shows. And You can also pull the feed if you want to get the feed from iTunes. So you can actually pull this feed down from iTunes, and it will also work just as well for you. So right now it's just a pure, simple, run-of-the-mill, everyday podcast. Please check out my website if you have time to do so at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voicemail. Now, a voicemail, what that is you call in on a telephone and you leave a message such as, "Jack, this is Joe. I was just wondering how you hook up a server to a switch, or, you know, ask me a question." That's all that's for. And it would be nice, and I know we have thousands of listeners out there. I know you have questions, and even if you don't, maybe, you know, make up an intelligent question and record it for me, because it really, really helps with these shows to be able to play some voice messages, and I would love to get some of those from you. That number is 724-701-0550. Once again, 724-701-0550. Now, if you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear from you on that too. I have email. And all you people out there listening to this show, or at least 98% of you anyway, are technologists. So I know you know what email is. In email, you just type up a simple question and send it to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And I will take that question, read it on the show, and then I'll give you an answer. So that's another nice way to help out. Another good way to help out is say, "Hey, Jack, for a future show, do you think you can do this or that?" And I'll bring you some new topic based on maybe what you're thinking it should be about. So that's another good way to do it. Hey, follow me on Twitter. I have a lot of you out there following me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. That's TechNoMan. Now, the first thing I want to do is I got about a 2-minute rant. And this is a rant that I heard. We were watching a show or a movie the other day, or a news clip or something. And the news person, or whoever it was, I don't remember really or recall who it was, made a statement like, "Oh, what are you going to," they were like in a booth or acting or something, said, "Oh, you know, are you going to be like the people that do podcasts and say that's like an actual job? That's work because you're creating a podcast." You know, and that really struck me and just kicked me in the backside and said, "Wait a minute. Wait just a minute. You're knocking a podcast, and no one out there," and some of you might be podcasters that listen to this show, "you know that we just don't turn on a microphone and we start sending out a bunch of BS across the wire and putting these shows up. It is work, and maybe not traditional work. We're not, you know, most podcasters, including myself, we're not making money from the podcast. We're not putting any money in the bank, and we're not sitting here doing a show once a week and saying this is our job. Podcasting is a labor of love. It's something that we talk about. I mean, if you're building furniture, maybe you're talking about that. If you work on cars, maybe you're talking about auto mechanics or tools. Podcasting, as I told you earlier in this broadcast or podcast, that I listen to people that talk about books. I listen to a podcast where they interview an author each week. And that's the labor of love from that person, because that gentleman likes books and he talks to authors. I think it's cool. So it's a labor of love is what kind of job it is. Now, is it work? Yes, it's work. You know, any podcast that you listen to that's worth, you know, a cup of tea, you will understand, and you know that I do it. We write show notes, so we have something to follow along with. We don't use teleprompters, because then you sound like a robot. Like, you know, "Today we are going to talk about that." That's ridiculous. Most podcasters are kind of off the cuff, and that's kind of where I like to fall, is off the cuff. I write bullet points for my podcast, but it's show notes. It's something to follow. After the show, I have to clean up the audio, so that's work. I have to I have to upload it to my blog site, right? So iTunes can pick that up. So Stitcher can pick it up. So the tech podcast people can pick it up. All of this stuff is work, you know, even setting up a blog and everything. So podcasting is work. Is it a traditional job? Are you, you know, maybe it is. Some people out there are making a lot of money on their podcast, and that's wonderful. But it just tore me up to think, well, oh, okay. So, I'm doing this because it's BS. And I don't believe so. I know I have a lot of listeners out there, you guys and girls out there each week that tune in to learn a little bit more about running servers and such. And hey, a few weeks ago, you know, to have Microsoft call me and say, hey, can we do an interview together? I mean, that just blew my mind. So that means somehow, somewhere, somebody heard me and decided that we're going to put this podcast on the map with some, you know, some back end of a big company like Microsoft. That was really nice. And that show actually was the number one listened to show on iTunes with my streams, with my podcast. So that was really nice to see that. So tonight what I'm going to get into here, I did write some, you know, more or less show notes, I guess. And we're going to talk about some stuff tonight that's going to hit home with you. At least I hope that it hits home with you anyway. And what I mean by that is very simply, first thing we're going to talk about is we hear these companies out there getting hacked and all this credit card information being stolen. Well, I believe, and well, I know for a fact it can be prevented. I don't know who's running these networks and who's running these servers. But as I tell my companies that I work for, is no security means that you set up is guaranteed. I mean, that proves a point before when NASA got hacked, the Pentagon got hacked. They have very, very knowledgeable security people. And there's no doubt in my mind, you know, I took a class one time from a security, a network security agent from the Pentagon. He was teaching on the side. And I took a two-day class with him on firewalls. And just the way this guy talked, his whole mindset was security. So I know they're very, very intelligent. But this is just going to bring to light a little bit something that we can do on a weekly basis just to kind of watch our servers a little bit to know what's happening. And I think we talked about that before when we were talking about bandwidth. You know, you have to look at your stuff once in a while, your network gear, your servers, your switches, and your virtual servers. I just told my partner today we were talking about on our servers, you know, we use VMware. So VMware allows you to look at the overall usage of that server, and you can monitor that. But if you don't know what normal usage looks like, you will never know what abnormal usage looks like. So you do have to look at things, you know, at least on a weekly basis. What we do is put it in, we schedule it in a calendar, and we share it with each other, a Google Calendar. And every, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday, you don't lock down one day because you can get busy. We go in and we monitor stuff like the server usage. You know, we monitor the network bandwidth to see where it's going. We monitor our wireless to see how much wireless we're using. Then later, if we have a problem, it's easier to pinpoint that later on. So you have to schedule that stuff in your normal week. So first today, we're going to talk a little bit about most malicious computer attacks have tall-tale evidence in a victim's security event logs. The Verizon data breach investigation reports have been bringing word on this for many years. Now, one of my favorite quotes is from the 2008 DBIR, which says, in 82% of the cases, the victim possessed the ability to discover the breach had they been more diligent in monitoring and analyzing event-related information available to them at the time of the incident. That says everything I was just telling you. You know, you have to have the ability, and all of us have the ability to discover the breach, but we have to be more diligent. And friends, I, for one, can tell you, I know it is hard. It is extremely hard. Sometimes in the evenings, we actually sit back and we'll remote into our servers, even on off hours. That gives us time to monitor the usage and see what's happening in off hours. So in other words, if you work at a business and you say you work in a factory setting, and most factories are like, I'll never get hacked. If you work in a CAD company and you're doing drafting, somebody can go in there and steal your drawings, right? They can break in and steal your drawings. It's a good target that people may want to go after. So every now and then you have to log in on off hours, especially if that factory or company is a daylight company where nobody's there at night. But even you, as a technologist, you need to get in there and look around on your off hours. So let's say if you work at a hospital, we know hospitals are 24/7, 365. Well, if I'm some night, I would just sit down in front of the computer. And what I would want to do at that point is very simply, I would get on the computer and I would just simply want to, log in and have a look around those servers just to see what's going on. That's something that I'd want to be able to do. So just another way of being very diligent. I was just sitting here and my tablet went off, which was very strange. It had a full charge on it. I don't know what happened to it. Anyway, let's move on and move up here. So the bulk of evidence collected by computers could be used to expose or used in an episode of CSI. In real-world courtrooms, crime experts remind jurors all the time that the elaborate evidence collection showed in CSI almost never happens in real life. In the computer world, it's the reverse. The digital evidence is collected all the time, but no one bothers to look at it because those log files are built all the time on your servers. All the time. They're always being built on your server. And a lot of times, most times, we never look at it unless we have an issue. And you know I'm telling you the exact truth because we used to be that way. And in the real world of computer networks, folks, that is called reactive. We react to something that happens. And thank God the logs are there because it helps us to analyze what happened and you can correct the problem. But if you look back a little bit and be proactive. Proactive is where we just talked about. You go in every now and then, you have a look around, you peek a little bit, and you see what's going on. That's being proactive. That's what you want to do. And, you know, this is the way to do things. Now, of course, it's more complicated. Most event logs are primarily useless noise that obscures the entries most defenders should be analyzing. In a huge proponent of less is more event logging, where thoughtful filtering significantly improves the value of the logs. When I hear a security event log team buying petabytes of disk storage for their event logs, I know that they are inefficient. Folks, this is not like Hoarders. Did you ever see that show Hoarders on TV? This is not like Hoarders where we got to keep everything that ever happens on our servers because 99% of that stuff, maybe 90% of that stuff is just normal everyday activity on our servers. Why do you want to be bogged down for that? You know, is it because of, and I know there's a lot of, at times there's a lot of regulations in different fields because I do a lot of clients that run medical fields. And we're governed by the HIPAA and everything. And if we get audited, do they want to see that, you know, Microsoft Word open correctly on two of the workstations today? Is that really important? Is it really important to know that the bandwidth was up and operational and network connectivity was good every hour of every day? Probably not. So it's good to build filters. It's good to kind of build your logs based on what you need and keep that, right? You don't need, you know, obviously, petabytes of disk storage. You just don't need it. Now, it does get worse. Most companies lack a clear understanding of what the logs they have or what even they should be collecting, not to mention which types of malicious events those logs might possibly detect. Now, what we do is, I'm no security expert by any means, and I'll tell anybody that, but we do have security forensic teams that we can call upon, and we pay them, and they can analyze the logs. They know what they're looking for. So if you think you've been attacked, if you think you've been probed on your networks, on your firewall or routers, if you think something's abnormal, it will pay you dividends to have somebody look at that knows what they're looking at. Folks, I think I said this once before. That's exactly why I don't lift the hood of my truck and take out my engine and clean it and put it back because I'm not a mechanic. I take my vehicles to the expert called mechanics, and they do a really, really nice job. In return for that, I've told my mechanics, the mechanics I deal with for my vehicles, please don't ever try to fix your own computer because that's not their expertise, that's mine. And together we've made this mutual agreement that they won't work on their computers and I won't work on my vehicles. Because you have to have an understanding of what's under the hood. If you don't have an understanding of what's under your hood for your security logs, look for a forensics team that does. And I don't mean look on the internet and do a Google search for forensic computer analysts. Because you know what? You're going to get Jim Bob Joe down the road who bought himself a Windows 8.1 computer maybe for Christmas this year. And now he goes, I'm a security analyst specialist. I know everything there is to know about them, their servers. No, you don't want that guy dealing with your logs and charging you a crap load of money. What you do want to do, my friends, is you want to be able to have somebody that has references, somebody that has been used by another company that you may deal with that maybe would recommend that company to you. That's the people you want dealing with your logs. This is not something where you price shop. You don't go to Amazon, type in, you know, I need an analyst or something. And you definitely don't hire one off of Craigslist. That's not where you find these people. These people are not, you know, we have different companies that we use to run cable, fiber optics, and even fiber. I don't hire my Cat 5 company to run my fiber optics because they're not certified in fiber. I want somebody that can run fiber that knows what to do with fiber optics. So the same thing here. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but be careful of who you hire. You want the best people for the job. Let's face it, you're working for your company right now. Do you not feel that you're the best person for the job that you're doing? Of course you do. That's why they hired you. That's why they entrust you. That's why my company entrusts me, because they feel that I'm the best person to do the job for them that I'm doing. I've been doing it a long time, and I'm always making adjustments, and we're always building on stuff and creating new opportunities for technology. Now, over the past year, I've seen many organizations creating matrix, usually a spreadsheet that detail every log that the company assets are either generating or could generate. It includes a list of every computer device and sometimes written logs to capture physical attacks, as well as workstations, mobile devices, servers, routers, firewalls, proxies, switches, anti-malware software, application logs, and more. Many of these devices generate dozens of logs. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you a little bit here about another tech director that does the same type job I do. Recently, we had a discussion with this gentleman, and he has so much time on his hand because at their organization, they have such a big team. He has people that are dedicated to network outages. He has people that are dedicated to replacing hard drives. Okay, not fixed a computer, just a guy to replace the hard drive, and somebody else comes along and installs the OS. So he has so much time on his hand that he went into his organization and he went to every iPad that the organization has and found every application that they're using. And he also found that if there's any in-app purchases in an application, if that application sends any data back to the app writer's servers. And he has a spreadsheet on this. Is it necessary? No. Is it a big waste of your daily energy and your time? Yes. So be careful with spreadsheets. Be careful about detailing everything. We as technologists, as technology directors, there's much more important stuff to do than creating a worthless spreadsheet that you're never going to look at, that nobody's going to ever ask you for. It's just not worth your time. So hopefully, and I'm sure this gentleman always listens to these shows, and I don't mean anything by it. I'm not attacking this gentleman personally. I'm just saying that there's better things to do with your time. I'd rather plan out what I'm doing next year with my network and what I'm going to rebuild or maybe redraw my VLANs or do something really, really constructive than to do a spreadsheet. Now, folks, let's take a Windows Microsoft server, for example. Now, everyone has worked with Windows event logs. I know you have. They cover application security and systems for many, many years. But ever since Windows Vista and Windows Server 2008, Windows event logs have included dozens of filter logs, each detailing a particular application or process. Examples include AppLocker, Authentication, BitLocker, Bluetooth, Code Integrity, Group Policy, NTFS, Task Scheduling, UAC File Virtualization, and WER Diagnostics. The individual filter logs are a great way to focus your forensics. Now, one of the key ones I talked about in there, well, actually, there's probably more than one, but is authentication. If you filter based on authentication, you see that you're getting a lot of, invalid logons in your authentication log. You start to drill down a little bit. Now, what you need to look at, here's something that we keyed in on when we did these, is we keyed in on, is it the same username? If somebody's trying multiple usernames on your network and getting the password wrong multiple times, that's a possible security breach. If it's one user, if it's Jane Doe, and Jane Doe, you know her, she forgets her password every other day because you make her reset it once every, 180 days or 365 days. So once every year, you make her reset it, and then she forgets it. So right now it's January 6th, and I'm sure she forgot already six times, because she had to change it December 31st. But if you look in there, you see Jane Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe, Jane Doe. Okay, there you go. So you have an isolated incident. That's called an isolated incident. Now, if you see Jane Doe, Bob Dove, Jimmy Rogers, Fred Rogers, Elma Lewis, Betty Sue Clampett, and all these people are forgetting their passwords, that is a possible security breach. That is something you have to dig down and really, really pull out and try to analyze that and see where it's coming from. Group policy is group policy. Another one I would be really, really look at is something, the NTFS, the file system structure. Make sure that's correct and not getting attacked at all if people trying to get into your file shares. Now, beyond built-in or custom-created Windows event logs, a typical Windows computer may have a handful to a dozen of other logs. Do a search on your computer, not on the internet, for *.log to see what I mean. Web servers have web server logs. If you're using a Windows firewall, events are usually saved to a file called pfirewall.log. That's pfirewall.log. You'll find install logs, Windows update logs, patch logs, diagnostic logs, VPN logs, and usually dozens of application logs. Non-Windows computers will have many, many logs as well. Even more anti-malware systems and devices have multiple log files. Now, how should you deal with this glut of data? We're going to start with just really, we're really going to start with two basic steps that's going to help you enormously across your network to protect your stuff. Now, maybe if these companies such as American Eagle, Target, there's been so many of them with security breach. I deal with these companies and I get so many emails as, look, your credit card might have been stolen. Maybe you better ask the bank to give you a new one. Hey, Jack, man, glad you're a customer of ours. Your personal PIN number for your card might have been stolen along with the number. Maybe you better get a new card and change your PIN number. Well, thanks a lot for inconveniencing my life, because you have a tech department that can't maintain your servers and maintain your network. Thank you so much. I'm so glad. Hopefully you found a new tech person to take the place of the one you just let go. And it's not always the tech people. Let's back up for a minute. So you work in a company, and I know I went through this. Luckily, I work for a decent company. I mean, thank goodness I do, because they are very more than happy. If I explain something that I need, I generally will get the device that I need to do my job. So one time I was sent to a security school. And in the security school, I was going for Cisco firewall programming. And that's where I met the gentleman actually from the Pentagon I told you about earlier. In this class that I was at for a two-day class, 16 hours of doing nothing but programming firewalls. So we go in and we're programming I think it was an ASA 5505. It's a pretty basic, straightforward firewall. But the ASA uses the same ISO image in it that all the other line of Cisco firewalls use, right? The 5505, the 5550, the 5520, I think it is. All those use the same ISO. So when you learn to program on one, you can program on the rest. Now, what was really nice about the gentleman is he taught us to program two ways. One is through the GUI interface, the point click. I don't even know why you would do that. The second programming he taught is my way of doing things through the command line. Now, what he was programming, here's what I'm telling you a story for, because why sometimes it's the company and it's not always the technologist. So he told me, he said, what kind of firewall are you using now? I said, I think it was a 5512 or is it a 512? I don't even remember what the number was on it, but it was a PIX firewall, P-I-X. He goes, well, that's wonderful, Jack, but the Cisco PIX firewall has not been really around and it's been outdated enough for, you know, like 3 years, maybe 4 years. Might have even been five. I don't know. We're now using the Cisco ASA firewall because the PIX now has, you know, it's not being updated anymore. It has holes in it and there's things going wrong with it. You need to upgrade your firewall. So when I told him how many users we had, he said, well, you're going to need to get a bigger fire. The 5505 is not going to work in our situation. You know, that's nice for a small office. That's nice for maybe 10 users. It wouldn't handle the traffic of our network. So we're going to have to buy a bigger firewall for more money. But, you know, I went back. So I took that class. Let's just say it was Monday and Tuesday. I went back to work Wednesday, and my boss said, well, what did you learn? Was it worth the money that we paid to send you? Oh, absolutely. Amazing. I had notes. Three notebooks full of stuff, and that was before, you know, I got into Evernote, but three notebooks full of stuff, and I said, it was just amazing what we learned. And he said, what was the main thing you picked out of the whole entire thing? I said, well, let me tell you what, boss. I said, the firewall that we're using right now has been outdated for about 4, maybe 5 years. And he said, oh, my God, what does that mean? I said, well, that would be like you going to a downtown city, you know, maybe a really bad part of the city, and parking your car, and then once you park your car, just leave all your doors open and hope that nobody takes anything. You know, you're leaving, or better yet, take your car doors off and hope nobody steals your stereo. And he said, oh, no, Jack, man, what were you to do? I said, well, we need this new device called a Cisco ASA. It's the new, latest, greatest firewall, and we need one of those put in our server. He goes, and he asked me, he said, well, do you have the knowledge now to program it? You know, or do we have to pay an outside agency? I said, no, I do, because I just went to this two-day course. So the course right away paid dividends back for my company that I work for. It paid dividends because we were able to buy the firewall. And, you know, we did have to lay out the money for that. But in the end, I was able to program it and save a ton of money for the company. And even today, we were programming that. So I still do all of our own firewall work. That's why it was so beneficial for them to send me to that course. But where I'm getting at here, some companies will go back and say, hey, boss, so what'd you learn? Well, our firewall's outdated. Well, what does that mean? You say, well, I don't know what it was, $5,000. Oh, No. Just, you know, shut your internet off at night. When we go home, just turn the internet off and then nobody will break in. You know, because nobody's going to hack your network during the day, you know. Lord knows during the day here in the States, it's night somewhere else. Or if you live somewhere else, I have a lot of listeners in different countries. If you're in Germany or in the UK, you know, when it's daytime or when it's nighttime for you, it may be daytime for us. So maybe, you know, somebody in the States is hacking the UK. So sometimes it's the company, because you can be the best technologist in the world, but if you can't explain yourself in layman's terms, and I think one day we may discuss this, because I know a new year is coming up and all your budgeting is coming around, and I know it's so critical, and I think that I have a talent to put things in what we call layman's terms. You know, you don't talk about high-speed bandwidth coming in. You talk about, I'm going to take a water line. So I either have a hose, a garden hose, or I have a fireman's hose, which will push more water. And that's how you explain data to people in layman's terms. And so sometimes it's just budget constraints where you can't upgrade your firewall to the new ASA. You're still stuck on the old PIX firewall. So it's just something to think about. Honestly, it's just something that you might want to pick up on, something you want to think about a little bit. And, you know, I'm not blaming the technologist out there for all these breaches because I don't think that's it. Sometimes it's the CEO saying, we're going to save money. Guess what that security breach just cost you? Billions of dollars. Billions. Maybe trillions of dollars. Because you're going to lose the customer because the customer's not going to trust you with their card number anymore. That is so critical. You know, and a lot of you know that have been listening to the show for a while. I teach these online classes, and your card is secured through PayPal because I use PayPal as the agent to take your credit card and make that transaction, right, for me. So we know it's secure. But if something would happen to PayPal and word got out that, you know, Jack with his online server courses had a security breach and everybody lost their credit card numbers, I don't think anybody would sign up for any courses anymore. So here's a couple steps we're going to talk about just to be able to clarify this a little bit. Is first of all, do an inventory. List all the devices you have log files for. The reason for the log file, the names and locations of the log files, log formats, possible events, current and maximum log file sizes, and anything else that might prove useful, rotation method, backup method, retention periods, and so on. The next thing you want to do is determine which type of malicious events your log files can detect. Create a matrix along with other access on a spreadsheet. There's them damn spreadsheets again. But you're going to need this stuff because if you don't know what you can determine when something happens, you don't know if you can find it. So highlight the strength, the gaps, and the weaknesses. And sometimes I often see companies use colored shading such as red, yellow, and green to quickly highlight a conclusion. Now, even though your event logs matrix is likely to be dozens of rows and columns wide, in one place you'll quickly be able to note your areas of opportunity. You can fine-tune your event log collection process by buying additional tools along the way. Without creating this type of matrix, you'll never be aware of your strengths and weaknesses, at least not at a glance. My favorite part of this process is finding areas of synergy that you never knew you had. For example, I've been pushing some of my clients to enable application control programs to generate events whenever a new unexpected program or process is executed. Whenever a new malicious program is processed, it is noted, or hopefully stopped by the antivirus software, but the detection can be compared to when the program or event is first appeared. The difference between these two events is a real risk, and it's basically a risk to the malicious event. I call it mean time to detection. The more you can shorten this matrix, the better job your antivirus software is doing, and the lower the risk you have for this particular scenario. Good event management isn't easy, but without an accurate event log matrix, you won't have a solid understanding of what you have and what needs to be fixed. So the last statement here was, go ahead, take the red pill and see the real matrix. You know, wouldn't that be wonderful, folks, if we can somehow get into the wires, you know, and get in our network and actually travel through the wires like the matrix does, go through the processor and see what's going on, you know. And in a reality fashion of it all, that is exactly what the event logs allow us to do. That's what they're made to do. They allow us to get in the wires and look around and see what's going on and probe. Is it a pain in the backside? Yeah, it is. It's a pain for us. I mean, but, you know, the overall planning part of being attacked is knowing what you have. And again, like I said, the beginning of this show is knowing what's normal. You know, if we know what's normal, we would know what's abnormal. And I can give you a very straight, off the cuff, what did I call that earlier? A very layman's term solution for this. I'm going to tell you. So I know that my legs normally walk, and, you know, being 50 years old, I know that, you know, I can get around pretty good. I know when my legs feel really good. Well, I know when I slipped on the ice the other day and I fell down my deck steps and my knee crashed into the side of my stairs, that now there was something abnormal, because I knew the normal. And now I really know what abnormal feels like. So, yes, I'm going to an orthopedic surgeon. Actually, that's scheduled for tomorrow. So we're going to try to get this checked out and see. I mean, it's not swollen or anything, but it hurts. So this is the same thing with your network. You know, and you, and a lot of you have been technologists for years and decades, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, I've been doing technology so long. I just said I wish I could just do one part of technology, but I love all of it. You know, I love gaming for graphics, just to see the graphics. I like to game. My wife says, you're 50. Why do you play video games? Because the graphics are just so amazing, what these designers are doing. It's just fun to watch it and play sometimes. The podcasting part, I love podcasting. I love working on servers. I love working on networks, building switches out, building networks. You know, I love all facets of it. So I don't want to do one part. I think one part would be extremely boring. And that's what I'm telling you. When you're like me, when you're a well-rounded technologist, and I don't mean well being fat, guys, don't make that joke. But when you do a lot of technology work, you know, and you understand a lot of the pieces of it, of how it works. And one lady once, somebody called her for an interview for me as a reference. And she made me sound like a crackpot. She goes, well, Jack has a way of talking to the computer. Like, the computer tells Jack what's wrong with it. And that's wonderful. But what I boil down to here with all night tonight, what we kind of stressed on this show was, if you have a forensic issue, hire a forensics team. You may have an idea of what's going on. Like, we've had ideas of what's happening in our network or what's happened to some log. But get those log files to a set of eyes that know, that do that all day. That's what they get paid to do all day, and they love it. That's what they live for. I've met a lot of forensics guys, and they love digging. I had a friend years ago that collected viruses, and he would re-engineer the virus to see how it was created to do what it does. And, you know, that's really cool stuff, and that's all he did. So he knew it very well. So anyway, folks, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. Let me just scroll down here and tell you that I would like you to use my Amazon link. I've been saying that over and over and over. And every month I get this nice little note from Amazon that says, thank you for participating in the Amazon link program. You have not reached the maximum amount of money of $10 for us to send you a check. Please try again next month. So obviously you're not using my Amazon link is what I'm saying. And if you don't want to use it, that's fine. I talked to some young lady the other day. We were discussing the show, and I was talking to her about my Amazon link. She goes, well, I use one for a muscular dystrophy donation thing. And that's wonderful. I'd rather you give money to a charity somewhere. You know, that's much better. I'm not a charity by any means. But the Amazon link does help do pay for things like software I need, broadcasting gear, microphones, bandwidth, you know. Anyway. So anyhow, use that Amazon link at tipsfromserverroom.com. Shut your ad blocker off. I only got a couple little ads on there. They're not no pop-ups or anything, so shut your ad blocker off. And folks, if you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi Server from installed to administration, please sign for one of my courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. There is many, I can't tell you how many people actually have signed up for those courses, that have taken those courses, that have landed the job they wanted. They emailed me and said, Jack, thank you so much for that course. It was so easy to understand, so easy to follow. They thought they were going to have a hard time with it, and they got through it. And now they're off, and they got a job with that certificate that I mailed out. So that's wonderful. You know, or if you're just doing this business like myself, and maybe you need a refresher. Maybe you're just getting ready to upgrade and get away from server 2003 and migrate to server 2012. But you need to know what it looks like and how it works and how it operates, because it's a lot different than 2003. You may want to take one of these courses. I mean, they're very, very inexpensive. Somebody emailed me once and said, Jack, why are your courses so inexpensive? They must not be any good. They're not like Microsoft certified courses, so they're not $2,000 or $3,000. Your course must be junk. The honest truth is, when I built these courses, I told my wife, because my wife even said, you should charge like $1,500. I had a gentleman email me once and said, you should, you know, these courses are worth $1,500. Easy. I charge a lower price because I work in the business. I do this every day. I wanted to pay it forward and try to help out people. And I know that going to school, going to colleges, going to take this, even as a, you know, even as a non-credit class, is going to cost you a fortune. So I wanted to make it inexpensive enough where everybody can get on here and take these courses. So check those out. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, click on the online class link at the top of the page, and sign up for one of those courses. They're self-paced. You do watch a video, and then you take a short 2 or 3 question quiz, and don't let that throw you. I've never had anybody fail this thing, never. You know, thousands of people have taken these courses and nobody's ever failed them. And they just go through because the quiz is based on the video you watch. So it's very, very straightforward. So once you complete the course, I will mail your certificate we talked about. Once again, you can sign up for those today at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Once again, folks, I hope everybody has a very, very good new year. Somebody asked me today, they said, did you have a happy new year? I said, I don't know. It's not over yet. It's not December 31st. I have a whole year to go. Ask me at the end if I had a happy new year. I don't know what's going to happen yet. Well, have a great work week. We know that's possible. If it's snowing and cold where you're at, keep warm. If you're in a warm climate, keep cool. And I'll talk to you here next Tuesday. Goodbye, my friends. Take care, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.